Blog Talk Radio.
We are the Borg. Blow your shield and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Hey guys, welcome to Trek Talk and what's going on tonight. We got a great show planned for you. We're going to talk about Star Trek the Motion Picture. We're going to revisit Star Trek the Motion Picture, I should say, since most of us have probably already seen it. We're also going to talk about the new Sector Condition cards, which... What? What? We're going to talk about the new Sector Conditions cards, which are part of the Star Trek Attack Wing regional gameplay. We're going to announce the winner of this week's raffle, which is the Chatang. And we're going to just hang out and have some fun. So are you with me, Dan?
Yes, I am.
So let's start off with what, Karen? I'm what?
I thought you fixed it.
I didn't. Are you going to have to close it down and...
Thank you. Dan's
got to
do homework.
Okay. Dan, I have something going on here, Dan. Did you get a chance to look at the Sector Condition cards yet?
Yes.
You want to take over the show for a second and talk about the Sector Conditions cards? I got to go take care of a problem with my daughter's computer. I'll be back in a couple of minutes, okay?
Okay.
All right, I'll be right back. Dan will take care of you guys. Trust me.
Hi, guys. Well... What we're going to talk about is there are three sector conditional cards. It seems like they're going to try to use these during the tournament that's coming up, the regional tournaments. The first one is Energy Flux. And it says, after targeting an opposing ship with an attack, but before making an attack roll, roll a single attack die that cannot be re-rolled. On a result of a battleship, reduce the attacking ship's printed primary value by half, rounding up. Further modifications to attack roll from game effects may be applied after the energy flux roll as normal. So, what I'm reading here is that energy flux is going to go ahead and cut your primary value down. So that means if you're running, say, Enterprise D, it's going to roll it down to 2 if you roll a battle stations, but any additional cards that add to your primary value looks like it carries over. So if you're running a plus one primary die or plus one die for attack, it looks like you get that normal attack because it says here only the primary weapon value. It says nothing about modifications because it says in the second paragraph, further modifications to the attack roll from game effects may be applied after the energy flux die roll is normal.
Hey,
so
I'm
hopefully
back,
you're
man.
Not... Okay, so hopefully we're not looking at your full a dice, modified dice, as in if you're adding dice to your attack roll, only the primary value. So this one will put a definite addition in, or change into the attack. The next one is Meteor Shower. It says at the start of the planning phase, roll one attack die per ship in turn that cannot be re-rolled, and resolve effect before rolling for next ship. It is, on hit or crit, damage this target ship as normal. Ships may roll defense die against this damage using their ship's printed ability. So this is just to simulate a sudden meteor shower and that you may get hit by a rock. So that'll definitely screw with you, especially those ships that are really soft. And... on top of, look at this way, cloaking. If you're cloaked, a hit or crit is going to hit as normal. So that means if you're cloaked out and you get hit by a critical, Meteor Shower just gave you critical damage, which is kind of screwy and very detrimental. So it should be interesting. And the final one, as people have stated inside the page, Nebula Sector Condition. Ships may only fire up to range 3 with their forward firing arc, and ships defending at range 3 receive an additional defense die. All other attacks are limited to a maximum of up to range 2. Ships without a forward firing arc, hint, hint, Borg have a maximum of up to range 2. So this is one of those, as stated on the page, Borg limiter. So hopefully with this nebula, we'll start seeing a reduction in Borg for tournaments. Well, if this is only a regional tournament, maybe we get a set of these and you play at home. That could be interesting. So
now, what
nice
do you think about these, Dan? Do you like them?
I like them. It adds an effect. It adds a not a random effect, but an additional effect on the board. It is somewhat random because of the dice roll necessity. So it's not like it's an absolute effect, except for the nebula. Okay, the nebula is an absolute effect. However, it doesn't affect you to the point that you can't be effective. It just reduces your range a little bit, which would help out for us of those of us who don't like using Borg at home.
You know, the thing I like about these cards, I hope that they come out with more like this, because how many times have we watched Star Trek where there's a quantum filament or a string or a subspace anomaly or, you know, any number of things can happen in space that affect the ship. And
oh, yeah.
I think that these just make it, you know, you never know what you're going to run into. You build your fleet and you take it into the game, and then you have a random card that just throws everything off, and that's the way it would be. So I think these are a great addition.
Well, yeah, and I figure they're going to make more of these, because, I mean, look at Magic. Magic has that that mechanic now where you pull, like, a card, and it's kind of like an influence card for everybody on the table, and it every certain amount of time you can turn it and change it and stuff, so it gives a little bit of randomness to strategies. They add that to this, that would be phenomenal. You add a 15 or 20 card deck, and then you build your fleets against each other and then shuffle it up and pull one, and then the rest of the game's got this one of 20 random effect. Or they can put 20 random effects and 5 blanks, you know, and just run them in there. That would be pretty cool. Or there's several ways to go about it.
Well, yeah, this way it's adding a completely random element to the game, which I think can only improve it, make it more fun to play.
Right, and it'll change your strategy even after. So, you know, if you get certain ones, you know, that Uber setup that you may have may just kind of get flushed as soon as you pull this random card. You're like, oh, crap, that really screws with my strategy.
Now I got to change it on the fly.
Right, and I totally think that your ships should be built, just like if you played Magic with that. You build your deck and then pull it. Well, this one here, you build your ship fleet and then pull it. It's like if you two ships, you know, ships were investigating something and ran into each other, that situation, they didn't know what was going to happen until after they already brought the ships they were going to use.
Right, and you just wouldn't know. You'd have to build your fleet and hope for the best.
Correct.
And we have Karma Chameleon and Matthew Dobson in our chat room. A shout out to you guys. They're talking about the Borg taking over everything right now. All the OP events seem to be the Borg.
To be honest, I haven't seen a bunch of Borg. They have been there, but when it comes down to some of the dice modification and stuff, the Borg doesn't have some of the dice modifications that the other ones do. So when it comes to these OP events, because we're not facing each other, we're facing the Borg. I haven't seen as many Borg as I did, say, the first month where we were facing each other.
And of course, with the giant Super Borg cube on its way, hopefully we'll see Locutus in that as well.
Yeah, I think we said that if we're going to see Locutus, we got a sneaky suspicion it's probably going to be on the cube, because that's going to be a big sought-after card, just like the sneaky suspicions about the retail DS9, that the cards that everybody wanted is going to be in there. So, you know, people will buy it. It's sad to say, but you might buy a $100 model for 3 cards.
Yeah, people will definitely do it.
Yeah, especially after seeing what they were asking for on eBay. Luckily for me, I got hooked up. Yay me!
And you also got the cloaked ships, too.
Yep, I got a full pack from my my contact in the gaming environment.
Now there is something I wanted to mention, everybody, before we get too far into this. We had to cancel the Borg Cube raffle because we hadn't sold any tickets, which was disappointing because we had such a huge response on the page, and I don't understand why. But we will have a lighted Borg Cube available for the grab bag raffle when we do the next one. So that's going to happen. And we had to open up the Chitang raffle to everybody because we also didn't get as many non-U.S. people as we had hoped for either. So you guys came through big time when it came to getting all the likes, but when it came to actually putting your money where your mouth is, you guys all disappeared on us. I don't get it. So we're not going to be running any more split raffles. It didn't seem to work. We're just going to run them for everybody, and that's what we're going to be doing. So I wanted to make sure everybody understood that. The next raffle that we're going to do is going to be a really good one. It's going to be the Stargazer. That's right. You heard me, the Stargazer. Our next raffle will be the USS Stargazer. And Dan had published some of the cards on our Facebook page, so feel free to check those out. If you'd like to give us a call and chat with us, our studio number is 646-668-2433. And I'll say that one more time. It's 646-668-2433. And if you would like to win a free blind booster ship, you're going to have to write that number down and call us when we ask you to call in a little later. So I'll say that one more time, 646-668-2433. That is our studio line. And when we're ready to have you call, just call that number and you win. It's that easy. So let's get on to some business here. Dan, I want you to pick a number, 1 through 19.
1 through 19. Let's do, I like 13.
Number 13. Lucky number 13 is going to be Joe Knight. Joe Knight is the winner of the Chitang raffle for this week. So, Joe, if you're listening, shoot me your address on the Facebook page, and I will get the Chitang out to you. If not, don't worry, we'll post your name on the Facebook page. Congratulations to Joe Knight. So now that that's out of the way, I wanted to talk about the alternate universe a little bit. Now, I haven't seen the cards yet, but there's a rule card that comes with the alternate universe, isn't there, Dan?
Yes, there is. I already boxed them up and mailed them to you.
But didn't you keep one for yourself?
No, the alternate universe is on the Resistance.
The Galaxy class.
Yeah, the assimilation. Yeah, the assimilate.
Now, I'm assuming, I don't know this, so if anyone out there has the answer, by all means, give us a call and straighten us out. But I'm assuming that the alternate universe faction is played just like any other faction, where you have faction penalties and whatnot, correct?
Yeah, from what I saw, it does play the same. But most of the ships have most of the ships that came with that resistance or the assimilate galaxy is dual. They're dual alignments. So. But yeah, it should work like normal. It should be the same faction penalty, or not the same faction penalty as everything else, which is kind of interesting, seeing that there's going to be different factions in the alternate reality. So I don't know how that's going to work. It's a little strange. Maybe, I don't know. I can only elaborate right now.
Right. That was my next question. If you pick up the Regency 1, and that's alternate universe, you pick up the Defiant, which is alternate universe, and you have the Galaxy class, which is alternate universe. Are these all interchangeable without a faction penalty because the faction is alternate universe, or are there Federation and Klingon and Romulan and Dominion factions within the alternate universe faction?
Yeah, from what I saw, the the Borg part of it was alternate, or the alternate and Borg. They had both markings. So, I don't know. You should have it in a couple days. You'll be able to bust out that card. I didn't even think about it. Taking
so
a picture or reading it.
You could then use the alternate universe Borg cards in the Prime Universe Borg cards. Are they interchangeable that way?
I completely failed in my tasking. I did not read that section. So we're gonna have to revisit this when you get the box and break one open.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about this next week and see what we can come up with, because that's an interesting question. If the alternate universe cards are mirror universe, I guess is what they're referred to. Mirror universe will all be the same and they're all interchangeable, or whether they won't be. We'll talk about that next week. Unless someone listening right now has the answer, you can give us a call at 646-668-2433 and answer that question for us. And I'll tell you what, if someone can call and answer that question, I'll give you a set of Fleet Captain cards just for calling and answering that question. How's that? Is that pretty easy? If you can answer that question, just call me up, let me know, and we'll talk about it. I'll give you a set of Fleet Captain cards. Very easy. Something else that Dan and I are going to be talking about tonight, which we're going to get to right now, is Star Trek the Motion Picture. Now, in my opinion, I think this is one of the most sadly overlooked and seldomly considered serious of all the Star Trek movies. And I really don't think it's quite as bad as people seem to remember it as being. I watched it on Blu-ray yesterday, and I was floored. The Blu-ray transfer is just absolutely phenomenal. It's incredible. I can't even – the colors, the clarity, the detail is just absolutely awesome. I mean, I can't even put it in words. But Star Trek the Motion Picture was not an easy task to come about. Before we talk about the motion picture – we got to talk about the history of what it took to get it there. Now, Gene Roddenberry originally wrote a TV series called Star Trek Phase 2, which was going to be the Enterprise's second five-year mission. They worked on it. They built sets. They actually had cast members casted for parts. Leonard Nimoy was not going to reprise his role, so they had a new Vulcan named Zahn who was going to take over that role. They were all ready to go with it, and twice they were ready to go with it, and twice Paramount pulled the plug, because this is what Paramount likes to do. The last time they pulled the plug, however, was right around the time of Star Wars. Paramount wanted to jump on the science fiction bandwagon. They're like, wow, look at all this money Star Wars is making. You know, we got to get in this. What can we do? And one of the executives said, wow, what about the Star Trek thing? We'll just roll it into a movie instead of a TV series. And hence, Star Trek the Motion Picture was born. Now, some people might not like it. They might think it's too cerebral, it's too boring, yada, 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 yada. But you really need to step back and take a look at what Star Trek was at the time and what Star Trek the Motion Picture turned Star Trek into. Star Trek was a cheap, campy television series, never really took serious by people, except for the fans who understood it like us. So when they made Star Trek the Motion Picture, they really wanted to get away from the styrofoam rocks, you know, the same ship orbiting the same planet, and they really went out on it. And New Enterprise, Space Dock, Starfleet Headquarters, Klingons, the whole nine yards. They went all out on Star Trek the Motion Picture. You know, Dan, you watched it recently too, correct?
Yeah, I watched it yesterday myself.
And, you know, what were your thoughts on it? I mean, I hadn't seen it in several years, so I really enjoyed sitting down and watching it.
I usually go through Star Trek probably once a year. What I didn't do was through the bonus section, or the bonus DVD, because I got the director's cut, so I got a little better special effects, and I got a whole documentary additional, so it took me about 3.5 hours to go through all of it versus, 2:15, what the movie is?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Sorry, I was cleaning up something while I was talking. There was a couple. Overall, the movie was. I've never really had a problem with the movie. I mean, out of all the original six, the only one I've ever had an issue with is Star Trek V, and we'll talk about Star Trek V when we get to Star Trek V, even though it is the only movie I paid personally to go see at the theaters for Star Trek. The rest, either my dad took me or something like that. So, there you go, William Shatner. I gave you some money, you bugger.
well, he needs it. He needs it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I have several notes, so when we get down to talking about little sections of it and stuff, we'll go over it. One thing I did see on the extra bonus stuff, the Paramount was trying to make a fourth network, and they wanted to tentpole it with Star Trek Phase 2. And when Paramount pulled the plug on the TV station, that's when they officially said, you know what, let's just go ahead and make it a movie. We already got money vested into it. Did also see, yes, that Nimoy did not sign up for Phase 2 TV show. He's like, I don't want to put these ears back on. And now look, you can't get the ears off of him.
No, he knows a good thing. Now, before we get into this, I want to play for you guys the original Star Trek The Motion Picture trailer. Now, this is from VHS. This is from 1978. It's a little bit scratchy. But I just want to play it for you so you can go back to those days when you were waiting for Star Trek to be on the movie theater. It was a really, really big thing for Star Trek fans back in the day. So sit back and take a listen to this for see if you remember it. Okay. All right. Why?
Travel forward with us, 300 years into the future, to confront the greatest mystery ever to threaten mankind. We are aboard a huge starship called the Enterprise. This is the return of Captain Kirk.
An alien object of unbelievable destructive power is less than 3 days away from this planet.
Mr. Spock.
I offer my services as science officer.
Dr. McCoy. Scotty. And joining them on their mission, Commander Will Decker and Navigator Ilea.
I'm sorry.
That you left Delta 4? Or that you didn't even say goodbye?
Get us back an impulse power. Forwards.
Wormhole distortion is overloaded the main power systems. The latest phaser order.
This, then, is the epic journey of the Starship Enterprise, traveling to the outer limits of time and space to challenge a vast, living machine of destruction. The human adventure is just beginning. Star Trek, The Motion Picture. A Gene Roddenberry production, a Robert Wise film.
So that's the original motion picture trailer, and as you may have noticed by listening to that, you did not hear the familiar soundtrack that Jerry Goldsmith wrote for the movie, because that trailer was put out before the soundtrack had been done, and that's common practice in a lot of movies. You'll hear music from other movies and trailers all the time, but this one didn't have the familiar Star Trek fanfare. And this trailer really didn't really tell you too much about the movie. Just, you know, all the characters are back. Here's the Enterprise on this mission. Blah, 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 blah. Very short, right to the point. That's how they made trailers back in the day. But I'm not sure if that trailer would have been enough to make me run out and see the movie if I wasn't a Star Trek fan. But that's just me. Now, I did not see Star Trek, the motion picture, in the movie theater, and I kick myself for that every day because Star Trek, the motion picture, is the motion picture. It's made to be seen in a movie theater. These huge, sweeping scenes, the fly around of the Enterprise and space dock and whatnot, watching these on a TV screen just does not do it justice. It wasn't until several years later when they had Sit Long and Prosper, when they played all six Star Trek movies back to back to back to back, that I actually got to see the motion picture in a movie theater the way it was meant to be, and that's the only way to see it. Dan, did you ever, you never saw Star Trek, the motion picture, in the theaters either?
No, I did see it in the theaters. I seen it when it opened. I was all of 4 years old, though. So, I mean, I don't have the memories, you know, fresh memories of it or in my head because I was 4 years old. I mean, how many things you forget when you were 4 years old? But, no, I did see it. In fact, I remember what theater it was. I passed the theater when I go to see my parents.
Yeah, I think that, let's see, Karma Chameleon says, watch out for university campus cinemas doing old movie showings. That's how I managed to catch it on the big screen. Yeah, you'll catch Star Trek from time to time. You'll see it pop up every once in a while. But as you alluded to earlier, there's actually four versions of Star Trek, the motion picture. There's the original theatrical version. There was the made-for-television version. There was a director's version and the remastered version.
Right.
So there's four different versions, and believe it or not, all four of them are different. Now, my only problem with this is the made-for-TV version has 9 additional scenes, which all involve dialogue. Now, if there's one thing I can say for Star Trek, the motion picture, it really needed some more dialogue. And why you would cut out any dialogue from a movie which is mostly lights flashing and ships flying through space dock is beyond me. But Paramount wanted to put the money into special effects and give Star Trek fans something special, something they had never seen before, and something that they all deserved. And I think that's what they got myself. But there are four different versions of the movie. Now, the version I watched was the theatrical version with none of the extra scenes and no remastered special effects. Unfortunately, but that's how they get you. They make me buy the Blu-ray, and then they'll put out, you know, the additional ones later, so that I got to buy it again. It's the game that they play.
But I have the director's edition, and the special effects that they changed. There's only one major change. They did show the external view of the V'ger without the cloud.
No, that was a cool scene.
Yeah, it didn't show it. Maybe the remastered does, but only the director's cut had it. They had to add like 14 seconds or 15 seconds. It wasn't something major, but it actually showed the cloud dissipated and it came out. And you know what it looks like? You're gonna laugh your butt off. I'll tell you exactly what it looks like. You ready? You play Star Trek online?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever done the Borg Daily Instant?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, when you beat up a bunch of cubes in the Daily Borg Instant, it this big long ship comes out with 6 spires on it, and it's, you know, a couple kilometers long, and it looks cylindrical in nature. That's what V'ger looks like from the outside. So I put a note in here, V'ger. The first attempted Borg, ?
Well, you know what? It's funny you should mention that, because early on, when the Next Generation came around. I remember Gene Roddenberry made a comment at one point in time that the machine planet that V'ger went to was actually the Borg homeworld, and that's how the Borg found their way to Earth was through V'ger's programming. But they never really expanded upon that, and it kind of just fell by the wayside and never materialized into anything solid. But back in the early days, that was all the talk, was that he actually was, V'ger actually was from the Borg homeworld.
Well, it looked, of course, it's a director's cut, but all the director's cut graphics that were added after the fact were all based on actual storyboards from 77 when they wrote out the storyboards, so that they didn't make up any of this stuff. They took it straight off the storyboards, which is funny because that means the actual design of the exterior of V'ger is off the 77 storyboard. So makes you kind of wonder where Gene was trying to go with this.
Well, one of the things that I find really interesting about this, first of all, I think the soundtrack for this movie is probably one of the best from any Star Trek movie. Jerry Goldsmith did a phenomenal job on this soundtrack. The opening fanfare, the Star Trek theme song, which has been used in every movie ever since, is brilliant. But perhaps...
And this is a second attempt.
And the best thing ever, and in my opinion, one of the best opening sequences I've ever seen in a movie, is the Klingon attack at the very, very beginning of the movie. After you hear the Star Trek fanfare and you see the names of William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and all of them go by, and you hear the Star Trek music and you know you're in for a Star Trek movie, and then you hear what that now familiar Klingon attack theme. And then we are treated to the best exterior shots of a Klingon Katinga cruiser we've ever seen, even up till today, when the formation, the triad, flies right over your head. And they zoom right in on that lead, the Amar, and the camera pans over the top, over the ship, and then follows it to V'ger. Pulls back, you see these three Klingon battlecruisers, and you see V'ger. Just a breathtaking scene to all do in one shot back in the 70s. Today they would just CGI that. But back then, John Dykstra actually did that with a model with one continuous shot. Phenomenal special effects work. The other thing which just blows my mind about that is the Klingons. We actually get introduced to the Klingon ridged forehead, which becomes a staple on Star Trek from that point on. Every Klingon has a forehead. We get to hear the Klingon language for the first time, which coincidentally was written by Jimmy Doohan. He came up with a couple of lines and threw them in there, and they said, okay, here's the Klingon. And, of course, the Klingon commander of the Imperial cruiser Amar was played by none other than the late Mark Leonard, who was a gentleman of all gentlemen in the Star Trek world. The Klingon bridge was just, I don't know why they got away from that, but when you look at that Klingon bridge in Star Trek The Motion Picture, this is what a Klingon bridge is supposed to be. Captain sits up front with all the screens around him. All his subordinates are behind him. They had the rotating gun turrets. It looked like a Klingon bridge. It was dark. It was small. There were support pylons all over the place. I mean, this ship was built for one reason only, battle. It's not a big, open, lighted, flowing bridge like we see on Federation ships. It's dark. It's small. It's cramped. That opening sequence of Star Trek The Motion Picture, I've yet to see a better opening sequence in any movie, not just Star Trek. The only opening sequence that comes close to that, for me, is the opening sequence in Star Wars when the Star Destroyer flies over your head. And we see the whole Stormtrooper battle and Darth Vader comes out and that type of deal. But I think they did an outstanding, outstanding job on the opening sequence of Star Trek The Motion Picture. Everything from the ships to the music to the Klingon language, the motion of the ships, outstanding, outstanding. What did you think, Dan?
Well, before I forget, I watched this the movie, and I busted out my little wonderful phone and started looking stuff up. I thought that the special effects artist that did Next Generation and Above, which is I had his name in my head, and now it just escaped.
Okuda?
Oh, well. No. Man, I just had his name in my head. Now it's upsetting me. The same dude, or the same guy that did the makeup for...
Michael Westmore?
Yes, Michael Westmore. Why am I having issues remembering names all of a sudden? Michael Westmore, I thought
it
did the makeup...
It goes along with old age.
Yeah. I thought he did the makeup for the movies, and I come to find out, he did not. He did not do the makeup for that movie. What surprised me is, do you watch the movie or watch the TV series Face Off?
Yes, I do. I have seen that.
Okay. Michael Westmore is a support judge for, not just support judge, but a supporting person for the people doing the makeups. V. Neal is a judge. And guess who was one of the makeup artists for the first movie? V. Neal.
I don't know. I don't know who, honestly, I should know who invented the Riz Klingon heads, but I know the story behind it was they had some extra money and they wanted to make the Klingons actually alien instead of just guys with shoe polish and little little mustaches. So they came up with that design of Klingons, and it's has stuck ever since that movie.
But I just find it funny that Star Trek ties those guys together, and I always wondered what they talk about in the background. You think they get together and say, "Hey, you remember that thing I did on Star Trek?" It'd be hilarious. But for the opening sequence, I thought it was pretty good. It did have that whole opening sequence for Star Wars about it with the big panning views, and it was all models, and they were detailed models. It was amazing how detailed they were. I mean, you figure the last time we saw any Star Trek ship, new ship, was in the late 60s, and they were absolutely devoid of any real structure or, surface details. They were just basically gray, giant slabs of metal floating through space with a spinning light on it. So I was pretty impressed that they put that extra money in there. I mean, you expect that for a movie, that they're going to put that extra money in there. But, hey, you never know with Star Trek. It was the first movie, for all we knew, we could have got the slab-sided D7 and the no surface, looking Enterprise. Yeah, so I was happy.
Hey, Delta Angel Fire has joined us in the chat room, as well as CG Take It Tie. I don't know who that is, but welcome, guys. We're talking about Star Trek The Motion Picture right now, and we're talking right now about the Klingon sequence in the beginning. And John Dykstra, who, of course, the movie he did right after Star Trek was Battlestar Galactica, and he built one Klingon battle cruiser, and then he just used plates to make it look like there was three. And this is the same effect he did in Delta's having some Swedish meatballs for dinner. this is the same effect he used in Battlestar Galactica when they had the Galactica model, and he made it look like there were six Battlestars instead of only one. So John Dykstra is brilliant, and his work on Star Trek The Motion Picture proves that. The Klingons were in desperate need of an upgrade, and boy, oh boy, did they get it. That's one of my favorite songs is the Klingon Attack theme. Listen to it all the time. It's an awesome sound. Now, not only did the Klingons get a massive upgrade, but so did the Federation.
Yes.
The Federation got the biggest upgrade of all. I mean, all these years of watching Star Trek, we never saw really Starfleet headquarters. We never really saw space dock. We never saw how vast Starfleet really is. We had an idea, but we never really saw it. And we actually get to see Starfleet headquarters and the Golden Gate Bridge for the first time in the motion picture. We're all spoiled now, but, you know, back in 1979, this was brand new to everybody. But the Enterprise, something happens in Star Trek the motion picture at the very beginning, which carries over to become a tradition on all the Starship Enterprises after that. And, you know, can anybody tell me what that was? Seiji. It's difficult to pronounce from first glance. Okay. Seiji. Okay. Seiji is with us in the chat room. I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. But anyways, basically, Captain Kirk takes a shuttlecraft to the Enterprise because Scotty says that the transporters are malfunctioning and he'll have them fixed shortly. So he takes a shuttlecraft to the Enterprise, which opens up that just outstanding, fabulous scene, which gets dumped on a lot, but you really have to look at it for what it was at the time. When Scotty flies Captain Kirk, well, Admiral Kirk, around the Enterprise in the shuttle. Now, the Enterprise was always on the TV show, and you saw it fly by this way, fly by that way. You never really got the type of detail. And to see every single side of the ship from every angle possible that you did with that six-minute flyby that Scotty does with Admiral Kirk. If you were a Star Trek fan back in the late 70s, you had to be drooling at that scene because that was something that every Star Trek fan always wanted to see, something that Paramount gave to you as a gift and said, okay. And in my opinion, that happens to be my favorite Enterprise, is that particular one, is the refit. I've always liked that one. I don't know why, I always have. And that flyby with Scotty is just awesome. And you know, when you're watching William Shatner's portrayal of Kirk, it's like, it's almost like, you know, he's getting back with his old girlfriend and he hasn't seen her in so long, you know, and here he is seeing her again. Outstanding scene, and the soundtrack to go along with it by Jerry Goldsmith is just out of this world as well. What did you think about that scene, Dan?
To be honest with you, I think it took too long. I mean, it's a great image, and it's great to see all of it. And in the extras, they talk about how they did it. I mean, the model was actually in this encasing. The model of the ship was inside the model of the station, and they had to make a telescopic or a periscopic type camera to go in and out in between the holes to get all those images and stuff. But sometimes I think it drug on a little too long. I mean, there's a couple things in here that I think drug on a little too long, especially when you start talking about a 2-hour and 10-minute movie, and they're cutting talking sequences out. Yeah, do a single pass, do some cool close-ups, get the ship, get the little pod in there, and get to the story. It's great to see the ship. We're going to see it plenty from the exterior through the rest of the movie. But yeah, I think it took. I mean, that was what, a four? I'd say legitimately, it was probably a 3 to 4 minute sequence, and I was just like, "Wow, okay, come on now."
You would never see a sequence like that in a movie today.
No, and that would be the reason why, because it's just like, "Okay, come on now."
Now after the sequence that we just saw with the Klingon battle cruisers, and then they follow this up with another sequence on the Starship Enterprise, that could have been shortened. I agree. The movie, there are things that could have been changed. But we are talking about, you know, what, you know, giving, showing the fans of Star Trek how serious they were about making a motion picture and not, you know, something they could be proud of, something where they put some money into it and gave the fans something. And, yeah, I think they went a little crazy. You know, they had all this money and all this time, and they used it. Not particularly well, you know, but they used it and they showed it off in a big way. And they didn't want to follow the Star Trek scenario, I mean the Star Wars scenario where, you know, you had battle cruisers, Star Destroyers and X-Wings and TIE Fighters, and they wanted to be different. So, you know, with the exception of the Klingon battle cruiser scene at the beginning, you know, this was just a little thing for the fans. And it didn't bother me. It still doesn't bother me that much today. I can take it for what it's worth. Now, you know, we've got some people in the chat room. If you guys want to chime in, by all means, please do. I know Delta's here. I can't believe he's being quiet. Says that he thinks that movies were just generally longer back in that time, and that they had a lot of long establishing shots to make it feel more epic and more dramatic at the time. So that may be the reason why they chose to go that route.
Yeah, but I look at it this way. You got to have the movie was 2 hours and 10, okay, and they cut sections of it out, but that sequence was so long. And to be honest with you, it still, when you really come down to it, look at it this way: how many ships did they really show in the whole movie? Real ships, not just, you know, copies. How many real ships did they actually show? Two.
So pretty much just the Enterprise and the Klingon battle cruiser, the
right.
Vulcan shuttle.
And the thing is, that's not really even a ship. I mean, it's a model they had to create and stuff like that, yeah. But, I mean, they used two ships. Because we never seen, in the original cut, we never saw V'ger in its external glory, only in the director's cut. And the other one they had was the Epsilon Station. And if I remember right, the Epsilon Station wasn't it looked like something from the black hole. It was a bunch of girders and stuff. And if I remember right, they used it. They didn't plan when they built this, but if I remember right, they used it 5 or 6 more times through the series. So they got their money out of that girder station.
Yeah, they did. They definitely did. They did indeed.
Because I think that Epsilon was just resurfaced and used for like one of the Next Generation shows with some kind of array, some Daystrom array or something like that. There's a couple times they've used it.
Now, the commander that we see of Epsilon 9 is the actor that was cast to play Zahn in Star Trek Phase 2.
Yeah, you took my line out. Yeah, I saw that too.
They put him in there. They gave him a spot in the movie. Now, this is a great segue because something else that Star Trek the Motion Picture does for the world of Star Trek, which people tend to overlook quite frequently, more frequently than they really should, is that Star Trek the Motion Picture was the only movie, if you listen to the trailer at the beginning, a Gene Roddenberry production. He had total 100% say on this movie and only on this movie. Star Trek the Motion Picture, for all intents and purposes, could be called Star Trek as Gene Roddenberry meant it to be. Now, a lot of fans might take that as sacrilege or might not like that statement, but like it or not, that's the truth. Gene Roddenberry had complete, total, utter creative control over Star Trek the Motion Picture. Totally.
And you can see that, like, when you're talking about showing Starfleet Academy, okay? You can see that because when you look at the approach sequences of Starfleet Academy, it's a building surrounded by forests and trees and you know, the pretty skies and fluffy clouds and beautiful water. There was no pollution. There was no overcrowding. Even when you see the same shots in the future episodes and the future movies, it's way more crowded. Not crowded, but it's way more San Francisco-like. I mean, basically, the one they showed there was like if an earthquake just flattened the whole place, grass grew over it, and then they put a couple buildings down. So that definitely had that image of perfection, you know. We're not overcrowded. We don't have 60 million people here. It's a foresty, pretty, blue-skied, you know, with some cool gray buildings in it. So, yeah, you can definitely see his influence on that stuff.
And the one thing that a lot of people don't take into consideration is that after the motion picture, we're going to talk about this next week, will be Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. After Star Trek, the motion picture, control was taken away from Gene Roddenberry and given to somebody who would be in total control of every single Star Trek from that point on, and that would be Rick Berman and Harve Bennett. And Rick Berman went on to do the television series. Harve Bennett stopped at Star Trek VI, I believe. These are the people that molded the Star Trek into what people deem to call the Roddenberry version of Star Trek, but is not. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. If you look at the technology, if you look at the Bridge of the Enterprise in Star Trek the Motion Picture, and then you look at the Bridge of the Enterprise in Star Trek II, they're not the same bridge. They're the same ship. They're not the same bridge. Not even close. The uniforms in Star Trek the Motion Picture changed totally. And I'm not knocking one or the other. I'm just making comparisons here. We'll talk about it in a little detail later. But the uniforms, not even close to the same anymore. Mm-hmm. Totally different. The technology, totally different. If you remember, in Star Trek the Motion Picture, they wore their communicators on their wrists.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, in Star Trek II, they went back to the foot type, like we saw in the TV series. They kind of took a step backwards as far as technology went. In Star Trek, and I'm not knocking it, I'm just making some comparisons here. And these were the influences that Harve Bennett and Rick Berman made to Star Trek. Were they for the better? Were they for the worse? I don't know. But what we saw in the motion picture is what Gene Roddenberry wanted Star Trek to be. And if you watched the motion picture, you would have noticed that the sets were big, massive, sweeping sets. Engineering wasn't a little tiny room with a blue pulsing light in the middle of it. Engineering was big. Same thing with the rec hall. When Kirk calls the meeting of the crew, the rec hall is huge, huge. And when Ilea's walking through the rec hall with Decker, it's big. It's big. We don't see and never have seen sets of that magnitude on Star Trek until J.J. Abrams came along. Same thing with the shuttle bay. When Kirk comes aboard the Enterprise in the shuttle bay is gigantic. It's like two or three football fields. It's not a two-car garage with two shuttles sitting in it. It's big. And this is what Gene Roddenberry's vision of Star Trek was.
I made a note here. It says, shuttle bay looks like self-storage facility. Today's self-storage facilities with all the little side doors and stuff like that. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it had all these little compartments around it for different things to fit into. But we never really, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we ever really saw the main landing bay on the Galaxy class, did we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. We did.
I remember seeing, like, Shuttle Bay 2, but I don't remember ever seeing the main big shuttle bay.
Yeah, no,
I know
we've seen
the smaller shuttle bay. That I know because that's where Pulaski lands when she comes aboard the Enterprise.
There was a whole sequence. They had to move or something like that, and they didn't have no power. So one of them was inside the big shuttle bay and decompressed it to use the air escaping to propulse the ship somewhat, which seemed like a interesting prospect to move that kind of mass. But, hey, you know what? So I do remember that there was a couple sequences with the large one. But it was not the main one. They always used the smaller one, I think the port side small one. Because there was a two-shuttle one, there's a three-shuttle one, there's a main bay one. And we always saw the two-bay one constantly, which was a small one.
Yeah, that's the one where Scotty left from as well.
Well, that and the one that Data left when he was doing the transit back and forth, when that Oh, what's his name? The guy that tried to fake his death and keep him as a collector's item. He kept going in and out of that of the small one too.
So, you know, even on The Next Generation, we never really saw the scope of the sets that Gene Roddenberry actually had them build for the motion picture. I don't know why they changed them, but they did.
Well, money.
You know, they had these sets built. I don't know why they couldn't have continued to use them. I don't know, but there was a drastic change between Star Trek The Motion Picture and Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan. Likewise, between Star Trek VI and Star Trek Generations, they stepped backwards to The Next Generation again. Because if you know, the uniforms were one piece, they wore the communicators on their shirts, the bridge was similar to what we saw in the motion picture. So when Gene Roddenberry got back to The Next Generation and said, look, I'll do it, but I want total control, and he was totally in control of the first season, you will see a lot of the similarities between season one of TNG and Star Trek The Motion Picture until Rick Berman took that over permanently as well. So for people that keep saying that, you know, this is Star Trek and this isn't Star Trek and whatnot, well, you need to go back and look at Star Trek The Motion Picture, because if we're going to talk in terms of what is Star Trek and what isn't, the only thing that really is Star Trek The Motion Picture and season one of Star Trek The Next Generation, because those are the only things that Gene Roddenberry was totally in control of. But that's a discussion for another time.
Right.
What did you think about that, Dan? Did you really, you know, what did you think about the technology, the world of Starfleet as presented by Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek The Motion Picture?
Well, the overall ship bridge design, I was okay with it. It definitely was a major change from what we had seen previously, because you got to remember, we got to kind of delete our brains of all the stuff after the motion picture. When that movie came out, all we had to compare it to was the original series. So it was only, you know, you figure it was, what, 12 years? Let's see, 79, what was it, 67 to 79? So was that 12 years?
Yep, 12 years.
So, yeah, so the shows were separated by 12 years, but I think the special effects and the you know, attention to detail and things like that when it comes to set designs were phenomenally different. Part of that is because, number one, motion picture was a picture, so they probably paid as much into the motion picture's budget as they did probably two, maybe all three seasons of Star Trek, the series, at that point. I mean, you got to remember, some of the sets from the original series was a purple black backdrop with styrofoam rocks and fake trees that they borrowed from the Lost in Space set. So, I mean, it's really hard to compare the two at that point, the two of them, because it was a difference between a motion picture and, say, a low-budget series. Now, compared to the other ones, I'll be honest with you, it holds up pretty good. Yeah, the monitors are old school, you know, simple monochrome stuff. Okay, I can deal with that. Even some of the screen effects for, like, let's say during the battle sequence with the Klingons, the screen effects were, you know, the red gritting. Okay, I was okay with that. The only place I really went kind of hiccuped at was they showed the gunner's chairs on the Klingon battle cruisers. You could tell they were just straight, like, little neon bulbs, or little, neon string bulbs that lit up in a sequence. And the other one was the control panels on the Enterprise were just basically plastic bubbles with light underneath it. Other than that, the rest of it held up pretty good. I mean, I got to go back and say, okay, it was the 70s, so for 70s technology, the movie's appearance and the sets were pretty awesome. There was a couple close-ups, if you noticed, when they did, like, close-ups to the Doctor and stuff like that, when he was leaning across the bridge and leaning across the railing, you could, because of the high definition and stuff, you could see, like, weld marks and things like that, where If it was really Starfleet, that stuff wouldn't exist. But hey, you know, it's one of those, I'll give him a break, you know?
Hey, Dan, we've got a caller online here.
Oh, okay.
This is Camille calling in from Munich, Germany.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, currently what's going on is that I'm calling into the U.S. and talking on a Star Trek podcast, which is pretty awesome.
And because you're calling
How
and
are you
talking
guys doing?
On the podcast, you just won a Star Trek blind booster ship.
And that is just awesome. Thank you so much.
So when you get a chance, just shoot me your address and information, and I'll get that out to you along with some other surprises, a Deep Space Nine token, some other OP stuff as well, to get you right into the game of Attack Wing.
Wow. Thank you very much, Jim. This just keeps getting better by the minute.
Yeah, it's our way of saying thank you for supporting us and putting up with us and dealing with us.
Oh, I think it's pretty much on me to, you know, thank you for your engagement with the community and all the great work you're doing. I really enjoy the show despite only being, like, aboard since last week, and it's a good time. Thank you very much.
Well, that's good. You've been listening to our conversation about Star Trek The Motion Picture. What did you think about Star Trek The Motion Picture?
Actually, I totally agree with you that it's heavily underrated. But it's also, like, you know, a very different motion picture from a very different time. And I got to admit, I really love it for, you know, like, its cerebral beauty. And it's just, there's some stellar shots in there. And if I'm in the mood, I can enjoy it a lot. And I'm watching the DVD at least once per year. But I definitely have to be in the mood for it, you know. It's not like The Wrath of Khan, which I can just, you know, pop in any time and enjoy something that is pretty fast-paced for 80s Trek. I just got to be in the mood for it. That's my point.
Yeah, Star Trek The Motion Picture is not for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I absolutely love and admire the craftsmanship that went into it. But I also think that it could have, you know, have used some stronger characterization and more dialogue. I think you guys brought it up before.
Now, over in Germany, is Star Trek as huge in Germany as it is here in the United States?
Oh, I think so. I think we're pretty much on equal footing here. We have, like, big national conventions. We've got, actually, in Munich, where I live, there's, like, a fan group meeting weekly, and that's, like, 4 dozen people in total that are pretty much regulars. So, yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I've never been to the U.S., and I've never, like, visited the U.S. Star Trek scene. But as far as I can tell from the Internet, yes, it is.
Now, have you ever attended a convention, I believe it's called United FanCon?
Yeah, actually not really, to be honest. I haven't dug in that deep into it. I've participated in some meetings of the local fan group, and I still do from time to time, but I've never, like, you know, traveled to some kind of convention. But that's sort of, you know, I think that's just me, because that's not about, like, you know, the Star Trek scene over here and the conventions not being good or friendly. It's like I'm just not a convention guy if I don't have to work there, which happens often enough.
I hear you. So while I've got you on the phone, what is your favorite Star Trek movie? I'll give you a chance, since you're calling us from Germany, to jump the shark on everybody. And if you had to recommend one Star Trek movie from the 12 movies that we have currently to someone to watch and say, this gives you the best feel of Star Trek, what movie would it be?
That's a tough one, the way you put it. Because you're just forcing me to choose an accessible one, you know. I'd still go with The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek 2, honestly, hands
down.
Yeah,
good call. Good call. I agree. Star Trek 2, Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a nice combination of being accessible, of being a very good movie in itself, even if it wasn't Star Trek, but also being a very good Star Trek movie.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the chat room is saying Star Trek IV as well.
No.
Yeah, Star Trek IV is a good one as well.
It's a good public one, but I wouldn't say it's a good fan one. How about that?
Star Trek IV is the only Star Trek movie that I went to see with my parents.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know,
I think
Star Trek II, Star Trek III, and Star Trek IV are kind of one giant movie, one story arc.
Yeah, it's definitely like a trilogy, isn't it?
Yeah, the other Star Trek, the motion picture, you can watch on its own, Star Trek V, Star Trek VI, so on. But if you're going to watch Star Trek II, you're going to put on Star Trek III, and then you're going to put on Star Trek IV.
I just missed Kirstie Alley in the third one.
But, yeah, so I'm glad that you called. I mean, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us and to comment on our Facebook page. And make sure that you send me your address so I can get you a blind booster. It is a blind booster, so I don't know which ship it'll be.
You will know because I wrote it on the outside of the box, but you haven't got them yet, so you'll just have to pick one out of there.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Is there any since Dan was nice enough to do that, and since you were nice enough to call us from Germany, I will let you pick the ship that you want. Is there anyone that you want in particular?
I would be very interested in the Jaeger.
Oh, awesome ship. I love the namesake, of course, being Jim Jaeger myself. So, yeah, you got it. I will send you a USS Jaeger.
Awesome.
Just
thank you very much. And thanks so much again for putting up a great show and for all your work with the community. Keep up the great work. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. You have a great night, and thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye.
See
you. Bye.
Bye-bye. See, that's awesome, Dan. I love it when we get some interaction with our fans.
Especially international interaction. That's always interesting to see, talk, you know, and discuss Star Trek from another society or, you know, another, not society, what's what I'm looking for, another group, you know, different perspective from another whole country.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. I'm gonna get him out, a USS Jaeger, and I'm going to put together a nice little special prize pack just for him taking the time to call us from Munich, Germany. That is awesome. I'm glad that he's joined us.
And tell him, and he's probably still listening, tell all your little group friends to join us too, because remember, we're not just the TAC Wing, we're Star Trek in general.
Yeah, that's something else I think that this show here proves tonight. You know, we like to do Star Trek Attack Wing, but like tonight, it's been a slow week for Attack Wing. There's no new ships. There's nothing really new going on. We talked about the sector conditions, and that was pretty much all we had for this show. But that's why the show isn't called Star Trek Attack Wing. It's called Talking Trek, which encompasses Attack Wing. And we'll continue to talk about Star Trek until something new, Attack Wing, comes along, and then we'll jump right back on the Attack Wing. So don't you guys worry. We will be talking about Attack Wing as soon as we have something to talk about. But right now we're talking about Star Trek the Motion Picture. And if anybody wants to give us a call and share their thoughts on Star Trek the Motion Picture, the number is 646-668-2433. And, of course, if you call me, I will give you a blind booster. So just bear that in mind. I'm not above and beyond bribery.
Yep. And
so anyways,
next week,
next
week, don't forget, we'll have new ships. We should have the NX-01, the Queen or the Scout Cube, and the new Vulcan ship. We should be able to talk about. I should have possession at least two to three of those. Not real hot about the whole Scout Cube one, but I'll take a look.
Yeah, there's somebody in the chat room talking about the board game Starfleet Battles. I used to play that as well back in the day. That was an interesting game. A little bit more complicated than Attack Wing, more like Star Trek D&D. There was a lot of charts that you had to look at and different ranges, and you had six different shield facings, and it was a little bit more complicated, but fun game nonetheless. Still a fun game. But anyways, back to Star Trek the Motion Picture. I really think Star Trek The Motion Picture gets a bum rap with a lot of fans, unfortunately. I have to be in the right mood, like our last caller said. I just can't sit down and just watch it on a whim. It's not that type of movie, really.
No,
but
you have to be in a Star Trek mood.
Yeah, it really is, and it's completely different from any of the other Star Trek movies. I wouldn't call it a fun movie like some of the other ones. It's deep. There's all, you know, you have to really be in the mood for it. But I think if you sit down and give it a chance and watch it with an open mind, I think you might find a diamond in the rough. You know, I like to say, to me, Star Trek The Motion Picture is more like, to me, is like Star Trek growing up. You know, to me, that's what it is. Somebody in the chat room says Sheldon Cooper calls it Star Trek The Motionless Picture. And it's standard for suckiness. Well, that's someone's opinion, but that's not mine. You know, Star Trek The Motion Picture gave us Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. You know,
yes.
If Star Trek The Motion Picture did not exist, some of the best Star Trek movies would never have happened. You know, Star Trek was in its infancy when Star Trek The Motion Picture came out, and it was their first attempt at it, and you know, they made some mistakes, yeah, but they fixed them for Star Trek II. I mean, Star Trek II and Star Trek The Motion Picture don't even compare.
Right, and the thing is, it was one of those things where they were trying to get their legs underneath them. You know, they weren't sure how it was going to go. They weren't sure, you know, if it was going to make the money they did. So they threw pretty good money, but not phenomenal money at it. And you can tell that they were kind of not holding back, but their script overall was kind of soft. Does that make sense? It wasn't like a hard hitting, action oriented. It was a blend between epic movie and a Star Trek series.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was in between a movie and an episode of the show.
Right.
And here we go, I'm breaking into one of my favorite songs, the Klingon Attack theme. How can you not love that?
How can you not love that? Oh, I love it. My geek comes out. I'm on a Star Trek podcast, okay, so I'm a geek. Yeah, I love it.
I will, when I play Attack Wing, this song goes on. As my Klingon fleet rolls out on the board, this song is playing.
No wonder people don't want to come over to your house and play.
Exactly. It's just a great song. It's phenomenal. But yeah, you know, we had to have Star Trek The Motion Picture. You know, if we wanted to have the Star Trek we have today, we had to have the motion picture. It was a necessary step in the development of Star Trek.
Let's see. Here you go. I got some funny side notes for you. You ready? If you look at the lounge when he's given the briefing as to what they're going out after, did you notice that there was a dude in full Indian garb in it?
Are you talking about when they were all on the rec deck being informed about V'ger?
Yes.
Yes, there was an American Indian. There was a Andorian.
Yep.
There's several different aliens if you look in that crowd.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't just like Indian colored like a Chakotay. He straight up had. He still straight up had the braids with the headband. He looked like something straight off of, you remember that old commercial they had about not polluting the environment, and they had a little Indian dude that had a tear running down his face?
Yes.
Yeah, that's reminding me of. It looked like something straight off that poster.
Yeah, that was something, you know, that Gene Roddenberry was really big on, keeping the Starship Enterprise completely, you know, multi-racial,
cultural.
I guess.
Multicultural.
You That's it, cultural, yes. Yes. But somebody in the chat room stated, you know, let's not forget Star Trek V, another bad movie.
Oh, help us all.
So we're going to talk about Star Trek V later.
Yeah, I guess maybe we should have preloaded this with what our favorite movies in order were. So we
yeah,
will.
I want to make sure that we give each movie its due diligence. I don't want to cram or cut too much out. I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about everything about that a particular movie, not just, well, I didn't like it, it sucked, and move on. That's not how you...
No.
You know, you want to talk about a movie, and Star Trek The Motion Picture deserves that, I think.
Okay. So on a 1 through 12, where does this fit? Where does this one fit in your sequence of 12?
Well,
does this fit like 6, 7, 10?
Well, you know what? It's really this is a tough question because it all depends on what kind of mood I'm in at any given time. I'll tell you this though. Here's my take. I'll tell you my three favorite Star Trek movies. Not necessarily in this order, but these are the three that I watch the most. If I'm going to pull out a Star Trek movie, it's going to be one of these three. Okay, these are the three that I like the most, the ones that I think are the best of Star Trek. The first one is Star Trek in 2009, J.J. Abrams. Awesome movie. The next, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And the next is Star Trek First Contact. Those are my three favorite movies. The three that I hate, that I never watch, that I won't waste my time pulling off the shelf, oddly enough, Insurrection, Nemesis, and Generations. Those are my three best, my three worst, and all the other ones fall in between.
Oh, sacrilege. My number one is Star Trek VI.
Star Trek VI is awesome.
Okay. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, I can watch that several times over. And probably, I would say First Contact would probably be my top three. My bottom three, sorry to say it, number five is disgusting. I mean, I shouldn't say disgusting. It's Star Trek. I accept it for what it is, but it's got to be number 12 out of 12 because it was so all over the place, okay? The next one is Into the Darkness. Into the Darkness, it did not do anything for me. I mean, I look at it and go, okay, it's Star Trek. Hopefully it'll get me a series coming in soon, and I'll pay. And the only reason I went to see – I shouldn't say the only reason. The major reason why I wasn't upset that I paid to see the movie was because I am supporting it to get me a series, okay? And the third worst one, I got to say, is I wasn't real hot about 3. Not that the 3 is a bad movie, but there's nothing other than the reviving of Spock and the destruction of the ship. Reviving of Spock, destruction of the ship, you take those two items out of that movie – and it was an hour and 40 minutes of meh.
Well, see, we don't want to talk too much about the other movies just yet.
Right.
But, yeah, it's hard. Let's see, what's going on in the chat room here? People are, yeah, Star Trek Phase 2. We can touch on that briefly right now. I don't see why not. I put a post on the Facebook page for those of you who may have noticed. There was a Star Trek fan film called Star Trek Horizon. It takes place during Star Trek Enterprise time. And I hadn't really seen anything about this until I saw that trailer, and it really interested me. It looks like it has potential to be really good. We'll have to wait and see, but the trailer looked interesting. Did you get a chance to see that, Dan?
The Horizons, yes.
And did that perk your interest?
Yeah, I did have a similar thing with, of course, the the lens flare thing. I mean, but whatever. I liked Enterprise. People beat up Enterprise. I liked Enterprise. Yes, it had some clunky ones, okay? But every stinking one, a series had clunky ones. Next Generation, whole first season was clunky. Okay? Deep Space Nine, all I can say is Move Along Home. That was clunky. Voyager, we'll talk about Voyager when Voyager comes.
Yeah, we'll Voyage there later.
Okay. But I liked Enterprise. So you're going to give me Enterprise, different ship, different crew, different stories? I'm in. I think it has probably, out of the series, if they were going to do a continuation or an addition to a series, I think Enterprise has the biggest window overall of doing new material, because they basically capped off the other series completely. Where Enterprise, they kind of said, oh, well, sorry that it cut short. And there's a whole opening of environment that they can manipulate that won't change anything, so stories can be whatever.
And there's also, I'm sure people are aware of Star Trek AXANAR. I've been pushing that on the Facebook page. That looks outstanding. There's also Star Trek Phase 2. Star Trek Continues, and Star Trek Renegades. So there's a lot of Star Trek out there if you guys want to go on YouTube and try to find it. My only, Horizon interests me because it's not fans trying to emulate their heroes. This is the biggest thing that I have about these Star Trek films is, AXANAR looks good because they're real actors, but most of the time, they'll have their mother play the admiral and their next-door neighbor plays, a red shirt, and they get whoever they can, and sometimes it's really cheesy and sometimes it's not. Sometimes the scene is played beautiful except the one person can't act for crap and it pulls the whole thing down. It's really difficult to do when you're a fan, but these particular ones that I've been mentioning seem to be done professionally, and they look really, really good. We'll just have to wait and see how the acting is. But AXANAR has Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. Gary Graham is reprising his role as Ambassador Slovak from Star Trek Enterprise. J.G. Hertzler is in it, who played Martok on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And Tony Todd is also in it, who played Commander Kern on Star Trek. So they have a lot of real actors in this, in AXANAR. So I'm anticipating it to be really, really good.
See, you said you didn't watch Battlestar Galactica, the new one over the last 5 years or so. One of the actresses that they're taking for AXANAR is what played Colonel Ty's wife in Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, really? The blonde chick that he killed?
Yeah, the early 50s, late 40s looking blonde. Yeah, she played Colonel Ty's wife in Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
And we have some hate being thrown at the new Battlestar Galactica. We'll talk about that. Don't worry.
Hey, back off.
This is a sci-fi show. We're not just Star Trek. We'll get to Battlestar Galactica. Don't you guys worry about that. But right now we're trying to stick to Star Trek. We can't get off topic too much. I just wanted to take an opportunity to push some of the fan films that are out there because, they deserve it. They work really hard, and, they deserve our support. So if you get a chance, check them out. Go to their Kickstarter. Help them out if you can because, they're going to keep Star Trek going for all of us. And oddly enough, Star Trek Enterprise is the only Star Trek series that was not affected by the J.J. Abrams universe.
Yeah, we.
So, Captain Archer, his prize Beagle, all these things that we saw on Enterprise are still in effect in the world of J.J. Abrams. So if they were to continue a new series, as we were talking about, if it would fit right in with what we're going to be seeing in the movies. And there is going to be one more Star Trek movie, which is going to come out on Star Trek's 50th anniversary. And The actor signed a 3-movie deal. This will be the final Star Trek movie unless they can get them back to do more, which I hope they do, because, you know, we need to show Paramount. We need to show, maybe not necessarily Paramount, but Star Trek fans need to be heard. And the only way we can be heard is when somebody puts out a Star Trek movie, TV show, an official event, and we flock to support it. Like it or not, the J.J. Abrams Star Treks have made a huge, huge financial success at the theaters. They've pulled in more money than all the other Star Treks put together. That's really good for the future of Star Trek. If they put these out and they bombed, well, then we might not be talking about a possible new TV series. So I hope that when they do this third movie, that they turn around and sign a contract to give us more movies, because as long as we're having movies, as long as we're, you know, people are making money on Star Trek, we have a possibility of seeing a new Star Trek TV series. And in the long run, that should be the goal. I want to be able to see a new Star Trek series. That'll keep Star Trek alive indefinitely. Well, until that series gets canceled and the next generation of Star Trek fans comes along. But at any rate, Star Trek the Motion Picture. Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Okay, so I have some more notes here. Let's talk about them. Let's see. Do you feel they oversaturated the theme music? I think there's a lot of times they just toss it in there to, like, reinforce it. The opening was cool. The ending was cool. But there's a couple times that they were like, oh, look, we are out of the wormhole. Now we will do the theme music. Yay, we're all alive.
Well,
do you think they oversaturated it?
Oddly enough, Star Trek the Motion Picture is the only Star Trek movie where the entire soundtrack is played in its entirety in the entire movie, which is an oddity for movies. But like you said, it was over 2 hours long. They had a 45-minute soundtrack, so they just kept playing the same music over and over and over. However, a few years back, well, maybe more than a few years, time flies different when you get to be old, so it might be a decade ago, but there is an extended Star Trek The Motion Picture soundtrack that you can purchase, a 2-disc soundtrack, instead of the standard 1-disc that you see everywhere, that has the complete Jerry Goldsmith recordings in their entirety. It was the first time that they had ever been released to the general public, where you can hear all the music for the movie and not just the movie, the music that was in the movie. So you can check that out on Amazon.
Do you think the wormhole sequence was too long or too annoying, or just the way they cut it with the line streaks and everything else? Did that bother you any?
Well, I think that what they were trying to do in that particular scene was they were trying to show you that the warp engine's not perfect, Starfleet's not perfect, and we need Spock to fix this stuff immediately. So they created this dangerous situation, and then they had Spock show up and fix it. But if they could create a wormhole like that in the first place, then they should be able to create man-made wormholes and just go from place to place instantly.
Yeah, see, yeah, now you're
because
now you're
we've
starting
never seen another one created on any Star Trek other than Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Yeah. Okay. When did Spock become empathic? You know, we know he can do mind melds. Okay, that's fine. He's in contact with the person. I got with you. He was straight up. Well, V'ger is lonely and stuff like that. I was like, when did he become empathic? And when did Deanna Troi become part of his psyche?
I think what was going on with that deal is that Spock, at this point in time, Spock is the only half-human, half-Vulcan that we're aware of. Well, there was Cybok running around somewhere, presumably.
You're making me think about Five. Don't make me think about Five.
Let's forget about Cybok for a minute. but, you know, Spock was a half-human, half-Vulcan, and Vulcans expunge all their logic, so basically they're like computers. humans are just an emotional wreck, but Spock is a unique balance of the two. And I think that maybe V'ger was reaching out and say, you know, and Spock was able to catch on to that deal because being half human, he could understand what was going on, whereas, you know, your basic Vulcan wouldn't be able to.
Okay, another thing I had was, like I said, I listened to the Gamma Quadrant podcast. It's been off for a couple of years, but I have them all saved. And here's something they brought up, too, on one of the series episodes, is they were constantly repeating, V'ger's this far away, V'ger's this far away, V'ger's this far away. Makes me think that they sometimes go, are you, humans are kind of stupid or something? They said it like five, I literally counted it. I think I have 7 tick marks. They said how close it is, 20 hours, 16 hours. I mean, they kept updating us. So I was kind of like, okay, we get your point. It's getting closer. Gotcha, Spot, or gotcha, Kirk. We're good.
Yeah, and then at the end, Scotty says, we can have you back on Vulcan in 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were traveling inside V'ger, and I don't think it was going that fast.
Well, I mean, what I was saying was Spock leaves Vulcan in the Vulcan shuttle, takes 4 days to get from Vulcan to Earth, so Spock flies to wherever the wormhole incident occurs, hooks up with the Enterprise, and then continues on their journey. How far out of the 4-day journey were they when the wormhole happened?
Yeah, not very far. They said they made it out of the solar system and then try to jump to warp. They didn't even make it out of the solar system. They said they're going to have to take the risk of going to warp inside the solar system. So they were still inside the solar system at sublight speeds, at maximum sublight speed. It's 8 minutes to the planet Earth at light speed. So, you know, I can do some calculations. It might take me a few minutes, but they were only a couple hours out of space dock. I think they said they were 3.5 hours or something like that.
Yeah, in the chat room, they're talking about the Vulcans on Star Trek Enterprise always seem to have to clean up after the humans.
Yeah.
And that's something that we'll touch on when we talk about Star Trek Enterprise, but the Vulcans that we see on Star Trek Enterprise are nothing like the Vulcans that we had seen up to this point.
No, they were almost, they were a little, they're a little different.
We'll leave it at that because we'll talk about that in greater detail when we talk about Enterprise, but the Vulcans of Star Trek Enterprise are really nothing like the Vulcans that we have seen in any other Star Trek series. And I guess we'll leave it at that until we get to that.
Another note is Star Trek Attack Wing related. There was a, as I like to call it, a tiny prize cameo. They did a zoom out when it was crossing across the top of V'ger, and it was just like a teeny tiny little Enterprise moving across the surface of V'ger. I thought that was hilarious. I wrote it down as a tiny prize cameo.
Yeah, now the Stargazer is a tiny gazer, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger than the Enterprise, TOS Enterprise first attack wing. It's not even the size of the base.
Wow, you would think they could do something a little better than that.
Yeah, well. Eh. Hey, they're supporting our game. I'm happy.
While we're talking about attack wing here, you guys are going to be the first to hear the results of our Federation Starship battles. I have the final results here. I was going to post them on the Facebook page, but I think I'm going to give you guys here the first opportunity to hear it before I post it on the Facebook page. We had the Enterprise D versus the USS Voyager. What ship do you guys think won?
Voyager.
Let's hear the chat room. Come on, Delta Angel Fire. I know you're listening. Yep, we have 1 vote for Voyager. We have 2 votes for Voyager. We have 3 votes for Voyager. I guess Delta's enjoying those Swedish meatballs because he's not answering. And I will say that... there he goes. Delta's getting in there. Yeah, it was. Voyager won hands down over the Enterprise D. Some comments were made about the 360-degree firing arc and whatnot, but in the long run, Enterprise D went down in a blaze of glory. Voyager took that one hands down. The second one that we had, the second day, we had the Defiant versus the Enterprise refit. Now, this one was close, so close, I had to count every individual vote to come up with a winner. Now, let's hear from you guys in the chat room. Who do you think beat one out in that one, the Enterprise refit or the Defiant? Let's see what we got going on here. Let's see if these guys follow. Okay, we got an Enterprise vote. We got an Enterprise vote. We got an Enterprise vote. As I said, this one was close. This one was decided by 3 votes on the Facebook page, so this was a close one. The Defiant with the bald Cisco is what Delta says. I hear you on that one. When Cisco lost his hair, he grew a pair.
Thought it was Defiant, wasn't it?
Yep, that was Defiant.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, our chat room, oddly enough, our chat room has gone against the Facebook page. Our chat room has gone with the Enterprise, but the Facebook page went with the Defiant. And it was only by a few votes. I said I had to count the votes. It was that close. And but Defiant won that one. Our next battle was between the Equinox. Now, this wasn't even a contest. This was the USS Equinox and the USS Reliant. What do you guys think?
Pretty sure I'm thinking it was the Reliant.
Yeah, I didn't even have to count this one. Reliant won this one hands down. I'm not sure. I mean, when you look at the two ship cards that's presented on the page, the Reliant and the Defiant are pretty much the same numbers. There's not much difference. I think one has an extra crew slot. The other one has an extra weapon slot, so on and so forth. But it's the Reliant. It's Khan's ship from Star Trek II. I mean, what more do you need to say? I mean, I think Reliant won this one simply on the fact that it came from one of the best Star Trek movies ever made. But, yeah, Reliant,
I think the
Reliant won this
one.
Yeah, this won this one hand down. Now, the next one is an interesting one here. We had the USS Jaeger against the USS Stargazer. What do you guys think in the chat room?
Well, I think it was a little bit of cheat because not many people got to see the Stargazer cards. But if you
I posted the cards on the Facebook page right next to each other.
I prefer the Jaeger.
Both the cards were right on the page, right next to each other, so you could look at both of them. But again, we're talking about the ship in the game. You know, which one of these two ships would you put in your fleet of a game of Star Trek Attack Wing? This one was not as close as I thought it was going to be, actually. So we have one vote in the chat room for the Jaeger. No one has chosen the Stargazer. Somebody said neither of those ships. They both suck. Delta's thinking about it in between chewing his Swedish meatballs. There, Delta's going to go with the Stargazer. We always have to have a nonconformist in the room, don't we?
Usually me.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll let you guys off the hook. It was the USS Jaeger, the Sabre-class starship, beat out the Stargazer. Yep, Matthew Dobson says the Jaeger has Shelby, so he picked the Jaeger. So, Delta's got to be different. So the Jaeger won that one. The next one, this one wasn't even close, not even remotely close, but we had the USS Raven and the NX-01. What do you guys think?
I take the NX all the time.
Yeah, this one was hands down... this wasn't even a close contest, but let's see what the chat room says. Delta says NX-01. Yeah, I put the cards up, so you guys, we got another NX-01 vote. Yeah. Yep, it was NX-01. Yeah, Matt still needs a USS Jaeger. But I think Matt won the Gorn ship last week, didn't he?
Yes.
If I remember correctly, I just packaged all that stuff out, Matt. You should be getting your, well, it's going to be going out in the mail. I'm not sure. I think Matt is in Canada, I think, so it's going to take a little while to go through customs. But you got a Gorn ship on the way with the whole package. But, yeah. So, yeah, NX-01 won that one hands down. I think the cards that come in the pack, you know, the whole plating that you can put on the ship for free, you know, the Raven just can't compete with that. And the final one that we have was USS Sutherland and the USS Excelsior. This one was closer than I thought it was going to be, actually. You know, Sutherland and Excelsior.
Yeah, see, I got a soft spot for the Sutherland, but I'm not sure if it won or not.
Yeah, we, you know, a lot of people said the Sutherland moved like a garbage scow, like the Enterprise D. They liked the Excelsior's firing arc better than the Sutherland. The Sutherland, being a prize ship, is a lot harder to get than the Excelsior, so I think a lot of people don't have a chance to play it. But we got one, two, three, we got three, four. We got four votes for the Excelsior and one for the Sutherland, and you guys are absolutely right. It was the Excelsior. So that was the first round of Federation ships, and we're going to break this down on the Facebook page. I don't know if I'll get it posted tomorrow or not. Before we get off the show, before we went out of time, I just wanted to mention, I just have to say this in a public forum for everybody to hear, that today is my 22nd anniversary to my wonderful, outstanding, awesome wife, who's been with me through all my Star Trek conventions, dressing up as a Klingon. She's just been dressed up as a Romulan. She's been there with me every step of the way. We've been married 22 years, but we started dating when we were 15 years old in high school. So I've been with her for over 30 years of my life. We have a wonderful daughter together, and I wouldn't trade her for the world, and I wouldn't change anything. So I don't know if I'm going to get to post the new challenges on the Facebook page, because we're going out to celebrate our anniversary this weekend. So if I don't get this stuff up this weekend, just hang in there, and it'll be there. That's why I wanted to try to get a lot of this stuff packaged and shipped out today, because I'm going to be busy this weekend. So I just wanted to throw that out there so it's on the record. So anyways, our next Federation Starship battle, we're going to have the USS Voyager. And you guys can think about this, so when you see it on the Facebook page, you can jump right in there. We're going to have the USS Voyager versus the USS Defiant. We're going to have the USS Reliant versus the USS Jaeger. And we're going to have the NX-01 versus the Excelsior. So those three starship battles are going to be next on the Facebook page, so you guys can kick that around a little bit, see what you think about
one
ship.
NX and Excelsior will be interesting.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah, since she's letting me, yeah, wonderful and understanding since she's letting you do the show right now. Well, let me tell you, I put my foot down. I put her right in her place. She knows not to interfere with me and my science fiction. Right, dear?
Yeah.
If one could kill.
Yeah.
No, she's been really supportive of my addiction to Star Trek. You know, I'll tell you a little funny story about my wife. She's really not into Star Trek. When The Next Generation came out, she thought that Riker was cute. And if that's what it takes to get my wife to watch a show, hey, I'm all for that. So Jonathan Frakes was appearing at a convention up in Syracuse, and I wanted to go. And she's like, and I said, Jonathan Frakes is going to be there. So we made the four-hour trek to Syracuse. We get out there. There's a massive ice storm. They canceled the convention. We're out there like, now what do we do? Well, this was the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation, between the first and second season. We're sitting in the lobby, me and Karen and my friend John. And who comes walking through the lobby? Jonathan Frakes. And he has a beard. And we see him there. And we run up to him to start talking to him. And security grabs us and, you know, pushes us away. Jonathan Frakes says, I always have time for my fans. This floored me. So we told him we had driven over 4 hours to meet him. So he says, well, let's go over here. So we go in this room on the side there, and the security follows us. And Jonathan Frakes sat down with me, my wife, my buddy John, and these two security guys. And he says, what do you think about the beard? And my wife is swooning. She was totally – first time I ever saw my wife speechless, because you know how women are. Speechless. And so me and my buddy John were talking to him, and he says, I think I'm going to keep the beard in the second season. You know, what do you guys think about the show? And, you know, just making some small talk. And then we asked if we could get a picture. So he stood up and put his arm around me on one side and my wife on the other, and I thought my wife was going to pass out. She was so just swooning over Jonathan Frakes. And that was the first time we met him, and I've met him several times since then, and he's always been an awesome guy. And that was the first time I dragged my wife off to a Star Trek convention. Well, she wasn't my wife at the time. We were only dating, but still. That was the first time. So my wife has been pretty lenient with me when it comes to my infatuation with Star Trek. So,
well, he's going to be – he was here this year, so hopefully he's going to be here next year. So we can all have – you can all go and reminisce with him. Oh, Jonathan, remember this time? And your wife,
I'm
going to
pull out the picture and say, hey, remember this picture? And he'll be like, who the hell are you?
Well, normal ones he probably has a tendency to forget about. It's the ones that are odd that he'll probably have, yeah, I remember that. Because you'll be like, you remember this time we got canceled and we sat in a room aside? And he'd be like, yeah, that was a strange day. I remember that. How much you want to bet?
It was strange. The heater in my car broke. We had to drive all the way back with no heat. My buddy John had this old, before digital cameras, he had this old Kodak with a 90-foot lens. He took the picture and then left the camera in the bathroom at the hotel. We had to turn around and drive all the way back to the hotel to get the camera. Oh, it was a nightmare, but it's something I'll never forget. It was a blast. It was a lot of fun. So
we'll
talk more about
that.
I will dig into my archives of Star Trek experiences through the course of this show, and you'll eventually hear them all and be sick and tired of them. So I'll just throw them out from time to time. But believe it or not, Dan, we've almost blown through a full 2 hours.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we're down to 9 minutes and 33 seconds. Can you believe it?
Yeah, but no.
Wow.
So let's talk about Star Trek.
So your final take, I'll give you what's your final take on Star Trek the Motion Picture?
My final take is it was a good jumping point to start Star Trek the movies from. I mean, if this would have been, let's say, the fourth or fifth or sixth movie, it would go down as Star Trek V's long-lost cousin, as being not such a great Star Trek, but being the first one to get us back into the swing of things, it was an acceptable movie. I'll take it as an acceptable. I mean, there's definitely got its flaws. It's not super action-packed. I mean, we got the new J.J. movies that are super action-packed and very, what I consider, content somewhat lacking. But this one was the complete opposite. Content was there, not so much action. So it swings on the other side. So I'll take it out of scale of 1 to 10. I'll give my we'll do a 1 to 10 scale. I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you, Dan. I don't think Star Trek the Motion Picture is by far the worst Star Trek movie they've ever made. It is lacking in action, but as I said, and here we go again, brace yourselves, I'm going to do it again. Here we go, simply because I can, because it's my show. And here it is.
You're so bad.
Okay, here we go, the Klingon attack theme. Just for the Klingon sequence in the beginning of the movie makes the whole movie worthwhile to me. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I love the Klingons. That sequence just is one of my favorite all-time Star Trek sequences. I love the music. I love the camera work that John Dykstra did. I love the effects on the Klingon battle cruisers. I love the Klingon makeup, the Klingon language, the Klingon bridge. That was enough to make that whole movie worthwhile for me right off the bat. So, yeah, I'm up there with you. I would give it a 6, maybe a 6, 6.5, 6.5. I don't actually really like grading the Star Trek movies because my grade of a Star Trek movie can change depending on the mood I'm in at a given time that I watch it. I might watch it one day and think, wow, that was really, I never noticed that before. And then I might put it on another day, and as soon as the Klingon attack is over, I turn it off and go away. So, you know, but yeah, I don't think Star Trek, the motion picture, is nearly as bad as people say it is. And yeah, six and a half. So that's that. Now next week we're going to be raffling off a Stargazer, USS Stargazer. I'm going to be busy this weekend, guys. I apologize. I have to go out and do the husband thing with the wife or she'll kill me and I won't be able to do the show anymore. So I'm going to be busy this weekend. However, when I get back on Monday, I'm going to scan all of the cards that come with the Stargazer and all the cards that come with the assimilate, what is it, prime target, what is it again?
Assimilated, yeah, it's the alternate galaxy. You should have it, it should be at your door on Monday afternoon, so you should have it Monday night to scan the cards.
So I will scan all of those cards and have them on the Facebook page so that you guys can print them at home and use them if you'd like to. At least you can look at all the cards and be able to see what they are, and I'll get them all up there on the Facebook page for everybody. And we will be having a USS Stargazer available in the next raffle, and then the following raffle is going to be the Assimilated Target Prime. So those are going to be our next two raffle ships, and I just wanted to say that we use, you know, the money that we use from these raffle ships, we do a couple of things with it, and we say this every show, and I'm going to keep saying it because a lot of people don't hear it, don't understand it, or maybe just missed it when Dan mentioned it. But this show costs us money to produce, so we use the money that we collect from the raffles to pay for this show. We also use the money that we collect from the raffles to pay for our Facebook page. Now, granted, it is free, but I don't know if you've noticed, but we gain about 100 members every month, and that's because I boost the hell out of our posts so that they go to everybody. That costs money, and then we have to buy these kits and pay for the shipping when we give away like USS Jaegers to people that live in Germany and things like that. That money has to come from somewhere, and it comes from the raffles. So not only are you buying an opportunity to win a great OP kit, but you're also supporting the community, you're supporting the page, you're supporting the show, and you're supporting the fans like Karma Chameleon, who just got himself a USS Jaeger in Munich, Germany, whom otherwise wouldn't have one. So that's what we do with the money. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Dan, do you have anything you want to say before the nice lady cuts us off?
Yep. For everybody, heads up, for our tackling fans, because hopefully not everybody here is a Tackling fans. Hopefully we're getting listeners just for Star Trek. But for our Tackling fans, we have secured a deal that'll get us a blind booster brick for the next set of OP events. Because the next set of OP events is going to have a new booster brick. It's going to be different than the ones we currently have. So the Bemoth, the Jaeger, and all that stuff, that's this, the end of this month. Next month, we're going to have a whole new set. We don't even know what's coming in with it yet. So if you want to get those blind boosters, because those of you who can't get on to attend OP events and stuff, here's your outlet. We didn't do this in the previous couple of months because blind booster bricks are not as cheap as some of the other stuff we could be doing. But because of your help and because of the work you guys done for us, we are getting this opportunity. So bring in some raffle money. We're going to get you some blind booster bricks. And as you can see, it's not hard to get a blind booster. Call us, talk with us, get a blind booster ship. I have every intention to label them with what they are. Now, once we run out of the ones everybody wants, you'll still get one. It may not be the one you would prefer, but you'll still get one. So eBay it if you don't want it, or put it in the collector and say, I got a cool blue blind booster brick or blue blind booster ship. So keep bringing that raffle money in. Don't hurt us like we did on the cube that we had to turn around and not raffle. We'll go ahead and put that into our our grab bag raffle. So there you go.
Yeah, and I also wanted to give a shout out to our friend Delta Angelfire. He does a show called State of the Federation, where They'll be talking about the Stargazer and the Assimilation Target Prime and different battle techniques for the different OP events. So you can go on YouTube and you can check him out. I mean, don't check him out. Check out State of the Federation. You can check him out if you want to. But what's up, dog? You can check out Delta if you'd like to. You know, tell him I sent you. He's a great guy. He's been around with us right from day one. So check out State of the Federation on YouTube. Just type that in. I think they have 13 episodes so far. Delta, what are you guys up to?
Delta, you may not be right in front of the computer. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, check him out. They got 13 episodes. When they do put a new episode out, I always post it on our Facebook page. So if you don't want to go to the trouble of finding him on YouTube, don't worry about it, because as soon as he puts a new one out, I steal it and put it on our Facebook page. So, he just posted a new episode, so I guess I'm going to go find it. And before we run out of time, I want to say one more thing. Dan and I do not, have not, will not, and have nothing to do with WizKids. We don't work for WizKids, never did, never will. I'm just a Star Trek fan like everybody else. Like Dan, like Delta, like everybody else. So we're just doing this for you guys and because we love Star Trek. So with that, we're running out of time. So I got to say goodnight to you guys.
Yep, good night, everyone.
Good night, Dan, and I want to say thank you to everybody that called in.
Good night, Jim, and we will talk to you all next week.
Yes, you will. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
Spock. Did we just see the beginning of a new life form?
Yes, Captain. We witnessed a birth. Possibly a next step in our evolution.
I wonder.
Well, it's been a long time since I delivered a baby. And I hope we got this one off to a good start.
I hope so, too. I think we gave it the ability to create its own sense of purpose. Out of our own human weaknesses. And the drive that compels us to overcome.
And a lot of foolish human emotions, right, Mr. Spock?
Quite true, Doctor. Unfortunately, it will have to deal with them as well.
Interrogatives from Starfleet. They're requesting damage and injury reports and complete vessel status.
Report two casualties.
Lieutenant Ilea. Captain Decker.
Aye, sir.
Correction. They're not casualties. They are...
List them as missing. Vessel status, fully operational.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Scott, shall we give the Enterprise a proper shakedown?
I would say it's time for that, sir. Aye. We can have you back on Vulcan in 4 days, Mr. Spock.
Unnecessary, Mr. Scott. My task on Vulcan is completed.
Mr. Sulu, ahead warp one.
Warp one, sir.
Heading, sir.
That away.